The Complete Car Care Solution, A1 Custom Car Care.
All right, good morning and welcome. You've got Sarah and Dustin, A1 Custom Car
Sorry,
Care.
Sorry, I didn't mean to blow your ears off
It's
there.
All good. It's part of it. Hopefully it woke some folks up out there this morning, or maybe not. Maybe you're having a good restful day out there. Who knows? But seasons are changing, Sarah. I know I start a lot of the shows like that because it seems like time just doesn't slow down. If I could buy myself some time back, I'm pretty much going to pay that whatever that price is, because the world is just speeding up and speeding up and speeding up. And I'm getting a little bit older, but you know, I got a lot of good years left in me, hopefully. I want to kind of start the day or the show out with some kind of current events out there in the automotive world, if you will. Some things that kind of, you know, hopefully affect you guys, or at least give you something to think about. We've got some young drivers coming into the, new driver field in our household. And I'm sure I'm not the only one out there. So I guess when I say current events, I mean current events in my world. And if you happen to have a child or a grandkid out there, I hope that you're taking a proactive role in what kind of driver they're going to be, as well as what kind of person that they're going to be too. I don't want to leave that out, because I think in today's age, we had better be proactive instead of reactive on a lot of that stuff. So, you know, with the new driver, this would be our third, I guess, or we're working on 2 and 3, I guess, simultaneously. So I'm rehabbing a couple old cars for them, because I have a pretty good bet that they're probably going to bend them up a little bit. And I watched, when I was in high school, the kids that got brand new cars bought and given to them, they tended not to take very good care of them. And I don't mean that in a blanket statement. I'm sure there's some out there that value. But if you look at the psychology of people in general, when you get something for free and you didn't have to expend anything, whether it's effort or financial dollars, that you traded effort for the dollars, trading time for money, you tend not to take care of it as well. And you have to kind of learn things the hard way. And I watched a lot of young drivers go through 3, 4, and 5 cars before mom and dad or grandma and grandpa got sick of it and decided, hey, you're getting a bicycle, bro. But I don't want to necessarily do it that way. And I'm not saying my way's right. I'm just saying I'm learning from what I've seen in the past and trying to do things a little differently. So what we've done for the first two kids in the driving world, we found them some moderately used SUVs. One is a Hyundai Santa Fe and the other is a Kia Sorento. Now, arguably, we've done quite a bit of work to those over the years. They were broken when we got them. I know everybody's going to be shocked to hear that, but that's pretty much the only way I buy a vehicle, it seems, which is fine. I mean, that is my skill set, obviously. But I'm really pleased with the first two, and I'm hoping to work through the next two in a similar manner. We were able to get them, rehab the vehicle or recondition them, which is what a used car dealership does when they buy a used vehicle. They get it back up to snuff, and they put it back out in the game. And I'm sure I'm not the only one out there, or maybe it's not for a new driver. Maybe you're looking for a new to you vehicle, and all of this applies other than the learning how to drive part. But it made me think that, you know, as we've had the two SUVs that we've had in our fleet, if you will, for the last several years, they have had some breakdowns over the years. And I wanted to kind of talk about that, because when we had the big cold snap here a few months back, both of them actually laid down on both of the kids, and it was related to the cold. It was inferior part. They were aftermarket parts that I had installed, because the vehicles are so old at this point. One's an 05 and the other is an 06, or one's an 03 and the other's an 06, somewhere in there. As the aftermarket parts and the manufacturers only have to supply OE or original equipment parts for the first 10 years. If they supply them after that, that's just kind of a bonus. And different manufacturers decide how long they're going to supply parts for. But it's a little bit of a planned obsolescence, if you will, that when they quit supplying parts, if the aftermarket world doesn't pick up the parts, you're over a barrel on that deal. You basically have a vehicle. And I've seen this, especially with Hyundai and Kia. We had a lady here not terribly long ago, bought a, I believe it was a Kia, if I remember right. And unfortunately, it had a catastrophic engine failure. And I'm actually a Hyundai and Kia fan as far as a lot of their makes and models. But as of recently, the technology and the part availability has been abysmal. And we could not get an engine because there was an engineered problem in those engines. And so all the used ones had, you know, blown up or you know, had a catastrophic failure. So used wasn't an option and nobody was remanufacturing a new one. Now, could I have torn that engine down, found point of failure, freshened the motor, rebuilt it? More than likely, yes. But the expense of a one-off build like that made it non-feasible to do an engine build on a vehicle that was worth probably $5,000 to $8,000, somewhere in that, you know, era. And if we had put, you know, say $5,000 to $8,000 in building an engine on it, you might think that's expensive, but I don't know if you all been to the grocery store lately. Ain't nothing getting cheaper, but I digress. You need to make sure that what your vehicle or what vehicle you're investing in is going to be a good candidate. So like I said, the early to mid 2000s Kia and Hyundais that we've got out there, and arguably there's quite a few out there still driving very dependably in those era of vehicles, they have been a really good, dependable vehicle for the most part. Like I said, we've had some breakdowns, but both of them have gotten through high school, which arguably a lot of cars don't. Now they have, the first one has gotten almost through college. I think he told me last night that he was two or three semesters from being done with college. And knock on wood, you know, hopefully we can get him there. We got the AC tuned up, which is why we had it in the shop. I think I'm more than likely going to have to put an AC condenser in that one this summer. So some planned repairs and maintenance, if you will, to make sure that vehicle hopefully gets him through college. And then our second one we have had out there all the way through high school. It's the Kia Sorento. Arguably, it's given me more problems than the Hyundai Santa Fe. But it's still been a good rig for us. Gets decent fuel mileage, get up and goes good. But this one's going to go back in the shop, or I had it actually in the shop a similar time with a failed aftermarket ignition coil. And so the reason I don't go OE on that stuff is, again, to what I talked about earlier in the show, they don't make them. And so that's really what I've struggled with as of lately. Now, I know, you know, they perceive it as my car's a piece of junk from time to time, and maybe arguably it is, but compared to a car payment, I will gladly deal with a failed aftermarket part once in a while. And when I say once in a while, like a couple of times a year, it seems like I have to do some major work on either one of those vehicles. But it keeps them from being under a debt burden, as well as it keeps them in good transportation that, you know, we throw a few $100s or maybe even $1,000, $1,500 at it, you know, if we got to buy tires or something like that. But it keeps them without as much debt burden as possible, so we don't put them behind the eight ball before they get out there in the work field. And that is a really big, important thing that I don't think maybe we cover well enough here on the show, is that every dollar of debt is a burden. And yes, sometimes, you know, we offer financing for repairs at A1 Custom just to spread that out. We offer 101 days, same as cash. And I put this in here, not as really a sales pitch, but, you know, sometimes people will be like, yeah, $3,000, the car's not worth that. I'm just going to get another car. Well, more often than not, the other car, if you didn't go buy a brand new one, needs the same $3,000 or a variation of it. I'm not talking about the same exact repairs, but somebody hasn't maintained the vehicle. Somebody has let some failed components go. And then by the time you buy it, there's several systems in there that need significant repair work. So we obviously own both of these vehicles outright. We've paid the taxes on them. They got tags on them. We're at the point that we're paying insurance and property tax. So the repair side of it is, as far as I'm concerned, is the cost of doing business. But the difference, or really the main point that I wanted to open the show with, is if you do a good job buying the vehicle on the front side, which is the due diligence side of it, you don't buy it because it's got a good paint job or tinted windows or cool rims or great stereo. You need the bones to be good. The rest of that you can dress up, which is what we're doing with the next two kids. And I hope you guys out there aren't throwing everybody into a debt load too quickly and keeping that in mind. and drive in debt-free is a really cool thing to do. But Sarah and I need to take a break. We're going to step into it. We're going to pick it up right after that.
Your complete car care solution. A1 Custom Car Care.
All right, welcome back. We got plenty more show left ahead of us, but Miss Sarah has got some, I think maybe some listener questions out there. Is that what it is?
Yeah. So last week we were discussing the start of spring and talking about our lawnmowers, our weed eaters and things like that. And so we were talking about pre-mixed fuel and what have you.
Absolutely.
So this is the question.
Okay.
A question for Dustin. First, I use pre-mixed fuel too. Mm-hmm. I love it for storage because fuel always sets in my saws and in my weed eater. Now, my question is, I know that you're a Ford guy, but what do you think of the Silverado Custom with the 6.6 gas or diesel engine paired with the 10-speed Allison transmission?
Man, I love this question. You guys, the questions you all send in, I mean, you're like my people. So there is a couple of 6.6 out there. I have been a 6.6 Duramax owner, various. I started with an LB7, and I'm going to nerd out just a little bit here. So if you're not interested, just bear with me. I won't camp out here too long. And that was a non-emissions, absolute rock star. I think I sold it at 70,000 miles. Still very dependable truck. Ended up selling it mainly because I wanted some more creature comforts and I wanted four-wheel drive. It was a two-wheel drive truck, which was awesome, honestly. But I upgraded, obviously, to the 2016, and I'm very pleased with it so far. It is not quite as dependable, and as you ramp up the emissions equipment that's on any engine out there, they get less dependable, at least for the time being. I think at some point they'll kind of air that out, but it's really difficult with multiple EGR systems, after treatment systems, etc., that I did not have on the previous unit, makes the ownership of a previous unit very appealing. Now, I have an LML, which is the model of Duramax that I've got. I will arguably say the L5P, they improved quite a bit of the emissions systems on there, and they seem not to have as much issues as what I have with the LML. But still a great truck, and I kind of knew what I was getting into. Now, there is a gas component here, which is Chevy's new 6.6 direct-injected gas engine out there. And I'll be honest, I'm paying really close attention to that engine because it's still under warranty, and they have not been out in the world long enough, at least in my experience. If you own one out there, I would love some feedback of it. Ford kind of did a similar, and I'm not going to make this a Ford deal, with their 6.7, I believe, or no, I'm sorry, it's a 7.3 liter Godzilla or General. I think they had a couple of generations in there. So basically, they've kind of brought back to old school it a little bit. They brought back big blocks is what, in my opinion, they did, gas engines. So the diesel things out there, I mean, I've talked a tremendous about, and I'm a big fanboy on diesel, but not everybody needs a diesel. And arguably, not every towing situation that I'm in do I need a diesel either. Now, diesel adds a tremendous amount of weight and expense and cost of ownership. And you don't find as many mechanics or technicians out there that will work on the diesels as you do the gas engines. So there's a lot of upside and appeal to the big block gas engine, even at a decreased fuel economy, because of the cost of ownership. The ability for service and maintenance is cheaper and more plentiful with the training that a lot of mechanics or technicians have out there. So at this point in time, I haven't heard or seen anything super negative with any of those engines we just covered, other than some cam and lifter failures. Honestly, we're seeing cam and lifter failures and internal mechanical failures at a rate that in the last 20 plus years, I have not seen professionally. And not just because I had my head in the sand, they weren't failing like they are now. So as they've pushed the envelope in horsepower, fuel economy, and pushed the technology into these internal combustion engines, they have done some amazing things. I mean, for me to sit here and tell you, hey, you know, the last Duramax I sold was at 370. And by the way, it is still on the road. I actually just saw it recently. And so I pay attention because a lot of my vehicles are one-off vehicles. Like, they stick out like a sore thumb. Nobody else is going to have, you know, some of the accessories or upfitting options that I put on a lot of my tow rigs. But I digress. The gas engines are really getting to where they're putting out some great horsepower and, more importantly, great torque. Now, hand in hand to dovetail to the back end of this question was the Allison 10-speed transmission. Now, I'm a big Allison transmission fan. They have made great transmissions for decades. The 10-speed, I would argue, is not as necessarily robust as I'd like, and there's a lot of tuning and software that they don't quite have all the bugs worked out of. So, you know, sometimes when I drive those 10-speeds, I'm like, man, these things just don't quite shift as smooth or as nice as what I'm accustomed to on, say, a 4L80E or an Allison 1000. The Allison 1000 was a rock star transmission. I mean, I'm a fanboy of those transmissions because, you know, if you kept them cool, they typically really didn't give you much problem. And that's really one of the bigger things that I see kill a transmission is heat. And so a lot of transmissions I see run around engine operating temperature. And so around 190 to 220 typically is where you see that transmission temperature stay. But in my opinion, I'd like to see it a little less than that. Now, there may be some tranny guys out there that have a difference of opinion, and that's fine. But I noticed with my 2016 Duramax, it typically stays at 125 to 135 most of the time, even when towing. Now, that tranny's got, I think, 118,000 miles. It is the original transmission. I don't know whether it was serviced. I bought it at like 105,000 miles, but I'm getting ready to do a fluid and filter change on it. I have changed the external filter once since I've had it. I'm going to do it again. But fluid maintenance on those is a huge deal, along with the software updates and programming that those transmissions seem to continuously be getting refinements in the programming. So sometimes that's difference in line pressure, how long the solenoid's on or off, etc. And the technology that's in those is really doing a pretty good job. I will say, from going from the, I think that was an 03, was my LB7. And I had it and towed with it for many years. I think I put about 70 to 100,000 miles, give or take, on it. Most of that towing, I really didn't have a problem with it. However, the truck itself, I really had to be on the ball driving it. And I've noticed with the 2016, the truck, I don't want to say it drives itself. It's not an autonomous vehicle, but it's just easier driving with the newer truck. And now that's not engine or transmission related necessarily, but it does make a huge difference of how much effort I have to, especially on a long haul. Like, you know, there's times I'm going out into Kansas to pick up disabled vehicles or, you know, St. Louis or et cetera. And I really appreciate that newer truck of how well it rides down the road. And I know that wasn't part of the question here, but I feel like that's a really important component here. The engine and transmission is very important, but the ride quality of some of these newer pickups is really astonishing, in my opinion. I mean, I like a vehicle with capability. And a lot of times when I sacrifice gas mileage with a bigger, higher capable or GVW vehicle, yeah, I could do a tremendous amount more, but I pay for it at the pump. Now, with this question, you're kind of finding almost the best of both worlds. You can go diesel and they get incredible fuel mileage, but you're going to pay up front. It's usually around $10,000 to $15,000 more upfront cost to buy a diesel versus a gas engine. Now, as they get older and depending on condition, that I'm talking about new trucks. The 6.6, I forget what Chevy calls that. If somebody out there knows, go ahead and message us and we'll try and update that next week in our show. But as we go to the 6.6 gasser, you know, Chevy's been making a really reliable V8 engine for, I mean, a long, long time. And I don't feel like anything's going to be different there. I do think and know that there was Ford and Chevy got together to actually engineer that 10-speed transmission that they're using, and they've had pretty good luck with it on the Ford and Chevy side of it. So I like the fact they kind of pulled their resources a little bit on that, and I hope they keep working together and making better trucks. And that's that kind of dovetails into another thought there that, you know, no truck is perfect, no car is perfect, SUV, van, whatever you want to fill in the blank with, whatever your grocery getter rig or tow rig or gas mileage rig, whatever the case may be, none of them are perfect. I would love for them to make a perfect rig. But when you look at those powertrain configurations that you're, you know, brought up in your question, I know that this was a long-winded answer, but I hope it helps somebody out there or, you know, gives you something to think about. Or if you got feedback and you own one of those, I'd love to know. I mean, obviously, I can talk personally about the 6.6 Duramax, but I don't own a 6.6 gasser. And if you do out there, I'd like to know kind of what you got going on. If you're a GM tech out there and you're working on them under warranty, I would also love to know kind of what you're seeing on those. The technology that they put into that engine is pretty well refined. The gasoline direct injection side of it, we're still struggling pretty hard on the, you know, down the road miles to maintain those systems correctly. I just had a late model Cadillac in not that long ago that is being known for basically it eating the number one piston on those forced induction little four cylinders. And in this Cadillac, it ran arguably very well before the piston, but I had a dead cylinder, a dead hole, no compression or little to none. And detonation due to some carbon and some ignition timing and running lean on that particular cylinder, in my opinion, is what ate up that engine. And I hate that for the customer because that's a very expensive, repair and usually not planning on spending that kind of money on a vehicle with 100,000 miles. So if anybody's got some feedback out there, hopefully I weighed in on it and that helped maybe. But if you own or are a GM tech working on those, I'd love to hear from you. So shoot me a message here at the studio. We are down at the bottom of the hour. You're listening to 104.1 KSGF. We're going to pick it up on the other side.
Your complete car care solution. A1 Custom Car Care.
All right. We're halfway through the show. We got a half of the show left to go. That kind of rhymed a little bit. I didn't mean to do that, but I'll take it. Miss Sarah, you got some stories over there. I guess, is it current events in the automotive field?
I do. So I've got a couple of recalls, and then I also have a crime story. So what would you like to hear first?
Let's do the crime story.
I have a feeling it's going to boil your blood.
Oh, great.
Fox News. Toronto police advise locals to leave car keys near front doors to avoid confrontations with violent thieves.
Are you for real?
I am for real,
for real. This has got to be like, I don't know.
This what is not satire.
This is the bizarro world. This feels like, I'm sure I'm going to date myself. Anybody out there watch Seinfeld knows what the bizarro world is. This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
This is also, and I don't mean to interrupt. I'm sorry for that. This is what happens when you disarm a population because the law-abiding citizens, anybody out there in government, if you're listening, please, you know, I'm not an expert on this, but common sense makes me an expert. When you disarm citizens, which is what they've done in Mr. Trudeau's Canada, they're the only ones that obey by the laws. The bad guys don't do that, and then you get confrontations. The good guys or ladies don't have the ability to protect themselves. The bad people who don't care about the laws go ahead and break the laws anyway and steal your hard-earned vehicle. And now their approach, if I heard you right, Sarah, is that you want to leave your keys by the door.
That is correct. So let's get into it. As car thefts have spiked in Toronto, local police are prescribing new safety measures so that locals can avoid violent encounters with thieves. One of the recent bit of advice, including Toronto police telling residents to leave their car key fobs near the door to avoid being attacked in their homes by potential burglars. According to the police, the number of car thefts in the city has more than doubled in recent years. In 2023, more than 12,000 vehicles were reported stolen. In 2019, just over 5,000 were reported stolen. Thieves have begun breaking into houses to steal keys in order to steal the cars, prompting controversial prevention advice from Toronto Police Constable Marco Riccardi at a town hall last month. During that town hall, Riccardi advised that residents leave their car keys near the front door of their houses so that they do not have to confront violent criminals who, he noted, often have, quote, real guns, end quote.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
You mean, wait a minute. I have, I don't want to say paid attention to Canadian law, but they're not supposed to have those, Sarah.
I know.
So what are we going to do about that? Oh, maybe punish the bad guys who are not obeying the law, or make sure that the good guys can protect themselves, or ladies, good guys and ladies, non-biased there. Or maybe we should hold the bad guys accountable and, like, punish them or something. But wait, no, in Canada, and I pray that this is not contagious and America adopts these policies, their solution, if I and I was real careful to listen to your article there, their solution is to give your car away.
Yeah, exactly.
And make it non-convenient or more, make it less inconvenient for the thieves, so they have to work less hard.
That's right.
Huh.
So this constable, he said at a February 27th meeting, to prevent the possibility of being attacked in your home, leave your fobs at the front door because they're breaking into your home to steal your car. They don't want anything else. A lot of them that they are arresting have guns on them, and they're not toy guns. They're real guns. They're loaded, he added. Toronto police sent out a memo clarifying these comments. The memo published on the official Toronto Police Service website also provided additional home invasion prevention tips. It stated an officer at a recent community meeting suggested that people leave the keys to their vehicle in a Faraday bag. I don't know what a Faraday bag is, but they're saying leave it in the Faraday bag by the front door.
Sarah, you don't know what a Faraday
bag is? No, what is it?
So, you remember the Carrington event that we talked about, which was the coronal mass ejection or an EMP? Faraday bag blocks the coronal mass ejection electric waves. I'm sure I'm butchering. Bear with me. The electric frequency of the waves or an EMP from a high altitude nuclear blast. But essentially, it blocks the radio frequencies for any device. Cool, like, hack, if you will. If you ever do need to find a Faraday shield, your microwave in your house. Now, don't turn your microwave on and then come at me because it fried your key fob. But it is designed to shield the frequencies that your microwave puts off. So when and if I have, I actually keep some Faraday bags at home. The microwave, like I said, is ideal. It's custom built for that, so it doesn't harm or cause you cancer inside the home. I did notice, by the way, if I have my Bluetooth earpiece on and I'm microwaving something, it does interfere with the earpiece. So there is some frequency coming away from that, but I digress. Basically, it shields the radio waves from your key fob from emitting, so it cannot be stolen with a scanner. It's a pretty neat little device. You can get them on Amazon. Cool thing to verify it. One of my techs, Waylon, super, very intelligent man. If you have, and the way you know your Faraday bag is working, if you have a Bluetooth device attached to your phone and you drop it into a Faraday bag, it will disconnect your Bluetooth connection. And that's probably not a foolproof way to know that it's working, but they're pretty inexpensive. And in today's day and age, it's probably not a bad idea. I don't remember exactly what the term is, but the shielding wallets that they want you to carry so nobody can and clone your credit cards, that's essentially a Faraday bag.
Okay, gotcha.
So just for some tips and tricks out there of how not to get scammed, the Faraday and the shielding wallets are, in today's day and age, probably a good investment, in my opinion.
And they don't seem to be too expensive.
No, they're not terribly expensive.
They start out
at
like $20.
Yeah, okay. It's not bad at all.
Yeah, I have seen these before. I just didn't realize that's what they were called.
That's the term, yep.
Yep, so they're suggesting to have them in the Faraday bag. But they also mention different ways to prevent auto theft. And then they basically just go into, you know, the different home invasion preventative things, mm-hmm. but I couldn't get over this story that they're like, okay, so your hard earned money that you have spent to purchase this vehicle, just go ahead mm-hmm. and let the thieves have it.
So I think, so two stories pop into mind. It was a story that you and Nick did several years ago. The, I don't know if it's the city of New York or the state of New York published the addresses of every concealed carry holder in either the city or the state of New York. And I'm going back several years. And initially, I thought the people that were gun owners in that state would get up in arms that they had published their address. I don't know if you remember, but it was not the gun owners that were upset. It was the non-gun owners that called the, it was a newspaper that put it out there. They called the newspaper and all kinds of crazy threats to the point that the newspaper that was very woke had to hire armed security, which I thought was hilarious.
It's ironic enough.
Yeah. And I remember listening to your guys' show and Nick going over this. And they, the non-gun owners, were so upset because essentially, and I didn't connect the dots as quick as Nick did. He laid it out there. It basically gave the bad guys a roadmap to the non-gun owners' homes of who to rob and steal.
Right.
And I was like, huh, wow, that's one way to go about it. So we're going to pay attention to Canada and see how well these new programs they're putting out there works. But I am really frustrated with that. And I have another story, but we are going to step into our last break. We're going to pick it up and wrap it up in a bow right after this. All right, welcome back. We got just a little bit of time left. I want to keep kind of articulating on this because I think, you know, we can learn a lot. I had one of my near and dear mentors teach me one time at a pivotal moment in my career that you can learn as much, if not more, from somebody that does things wrong than if you have a great, like, shining example of what to do things right. And for some reason, the common sense thing, I think, is just thrown out the window with the baby in the bathwater, unfortunately. The second story that I wanted to bring up is something that happened pretty recently. Sarah, I don't remember if you and I talked about this on the show, but old boy that lives in Canada had an Apple iTag or the little GPS coin thing,
right?
Whatever they're called.
I think they're called AirTags.
AirTags, okay. I'm not an Apple person, you know, I prefer Freedom and Samsung. So, you know, I'm just putting that out there. I'm going to make everybody mad at me today. But I will say those AirTags really have kind of been a big deal. This gentleman had one in his new late model Suburban, probably a $70,000-$80,000 Suburban. They did a news story on it. Sarah, did we talk about this at all? Does this ring a bell to you?
I don't think so.
Maybe it was just something I ran onto. I probably should have sent this information to you. But long story short, his vehicle gets stolen in Canada, which now hearing Sarah's story here is a...
kind of makes sense, right?
Yeah, it's like, really, folks, you might as well just give it to him. Make sure you fill it up with gas before they take it away. But he was able to track it to the port and to the shipping container that it was in. But because of legal red tape, which some, you know, I get it. We need search and seizure legislation. We need some protections from unlawful search and seizure. They could not open the container in time before it got shipped to Dubai. So his late model, low miles Suburban gets into a shipping container, gets shipped to Dubai. He can watch it. They had all the information that he provided to the news story that I saw this on, and ends up finding it posted on the website for sale in Dubai.
That would be so frustrating.
Yeah, and old boy has no recourse. I would assume he has insurance, and they probably paid him off, but I'm just like, really, folks?
It's the fact that you can literally watch it be stolen.
Yep.
You've taken preventative maintenance or preventative steps,
yep,
and then still nothing is done.
So a near and dear friend of the show, Mr. O, I think is how we typically refer to him, he avidly listens, gives us a lot of feedback. He gives us a lot of material or you know, that we talk about here on the show, and he's been a guest here on the show. You know, we talk about personal... situational awareness, setting your property or your business up for a hopefully a hard target. And if you have a garage, you need to clean out your garage and park your vehicles in the garage. Now, that doesn't mean that people can't steal it from your garage, but it's one more layer of protection. And he happened him and I were visiting back and forth a few nights back, and he sent me a photo of, I think it was one, if not two of his vehicles inside his garage. And he's like, I'm doing this so they don't get driven away from my property, essentially. I'm paraphrasing here, but it was part of our discussion here on the show. Now, do I park all of my vehicles inside? Well, I have a few, so no, unless I had a huge abandoned warehouse, I probably can't do that. But what I'm personally doing right now are being proactive. A, I have pretty decent camera system at my house and at our business locations. So unfortunately, I can see when somebody steals things and drives away or whatever, if it were to happen. I haven't had that happen. So I have good, at least viewpoints of my property at all times. I have also put driveway alarms in, which are about a $60 item on Amazon. I strongly recommend them. I absolutely strongly recommend them, especially at your guys' house with you and Ryan. It gives you that extra few seconds or moments or awareness before somebody's right at your door.
Right.
Now, mine has four different chimes, four channels, and I know mine is set on channel 3 and it has a different chime. I really am going to install the other three channels to give me better coverage. They're solar charged, so they typically stay charged. They give me a notification as somebody comes into the driveway, and I can either view it from the camera or meet them at their door, hopefully, before they're at my door. And so it gives me and Stacy and the kids some awareness that somebody's here. And those are some of the things that I have done over the years, and they've worked really well. What I'm working on now is our property was open from the road. Like, you could just walk up to the house. Now, over the last year, in increments, I have saved a little bit and bought supplies and salvaged supplies and fixed some old engine drive welders so I can build a fence across our property with a gate that's roughly 50 feet off the road. That way, I have a choke point. Now, arguably, people can climb the gate or the fence, they can cut the gate, all that stuff. But it's another barrier that makes, hopefully, my property less appealing. And I've talked about this on the show before. When I was a kid, Jeff Foxworthy was a huge stand-up comedian. And he talked about pulling up to a soft target house. You know, the lights are on, the grass is mowed, you know, there's nothing out of place. But there's also no barriers for that bad person to do something nefarious. And then this obviously struck a chord with me. He said, you pull up to a house with an engine hanging from a tree, that's a house where a gun lives. And I just always thought that was hilarious. Maybe that's me being 12 again. But he raises a fair point. Now, I don't have any engines hanging from the tree. Have I over the years? Yes, I have. But I don't have any now. My point being is you need to be a self-aware and an objective observer of your house and business. And if and what you can do to make you a harder target than the others versus, I'm basically taking a complete opposite stance to the Canadian government. And I'm not sorry for that. And I hope you all out there are not sorry for that either. And you protect your hard-earned items. Now, I'm not saying it's worth somebody dying for. I'm not saying that at all. That's situation by situation decision. But I sure don't want somebody to drive by my place and think that, oh, when I'm gone, something bad or easy could happen because I want it as secure as possible. Now, any place, any fortification can be overtook in enough time and effort. I mean, history, if you study that at all, knows that. However, you need to make sure that you're stacking the cards in your favor. And in today's world, we need to be better at that. We were actually talking about this at the shop the other day, that when I was a kid, man, they let you run. We lived rural a lot of my childhood, but from about 6 to maybe 10 or 12, we lived in an urban, very high population environment. LaPorte, Indiana is the majority of it. Glean, Michigan, a little bit in Michigan City. So I'm originally from the Joplin area. So that was a little bit of a culture shock for me in both directions. But we would run and nobody thought anything about it. We would go in our friends' homes, no big deal. I mean, it just worked. Now, I don't want to even let my older kids go to a concert without you know, some kind of supervision because the world's getting crazy. But that doesn't mean that I'm going to dig my head in the sand, and I hope you guys aren't either, or live in fear. Awareness and education is absolutely, in my opinion, the only thing that works. And not being an easy target or a victim-minded person. Like, oh, how did this happen? Well, sometimes bad things happen. But a lot of times we allow bad things to happen due to complacency or a false sense of security. And I don't mean this to be a gloom and doom. I feel like sometimes I end up going that manner. And that's really not how I perceive the world or how I work day to day. It's we had better be absolutely prepared, absolutely as much as possible, educated as much as possible, surround ourselves with like-minded people that are proactive instead of reactive. Have I had some bad situations over the years? Oh, yeah. Have I learned from those and adapted my EDC, which is everyday carry, to that? Absolutely. Are my vehicles set up to get me out of a lot of those jams? Oh, yeah. And it's not just for me that I put that out there. That also helps a lot of other people. And it's not always like a robbery that I'm dealing with. A lot of times it's just life happens or, you know, law of averages that if you're having a great day, well, sometimes life throws you a curveball. You get a flat tire, your battery takes a dump all at once. You know, you can fill in the blank with a lot of things. And I stop and help a tremendous amount of people when they're in that situation to get them out of a jam. I literally just had a lady that ran out of gas in my driveway this last week. Because I store a little bit of extra fuel around, I went ahead and filled it up. Well, I didn't fill it up. I put 5 gallons in it, got her vehicle going, hopefully didn't harm the fuel pump, and sent her on her way and just said, hey, pass it on to the next person. That's what life needs to be, not, in my opinion, oh, leave your keys by the door to make it easier for the bad people to steal your stuff. Oh, and guess what? You might think that that only affects the people that their vehicles got stolen, but that insurance company took a loss, and they spread that loss out to the rest of us, by the way, and we got to pay for that vehicle that they didn't deem worthy of getting out of the shipping container before it went to Dubai. And I'm getting real tired of paying other people's bills out there, for lack of a better word, and the government just deciding that they are entitled to all of our hard-earned money. And I pay my taxes just like everybody else. I finally paid my property tax here to Christian County the other day. I didn't love it, but that's part of the game. However, I am not going to sit there and just idly buy, take it, and set my keys by the door, and maybe, why not put a sign outside that says, hey, free cars, no repercussions? Because that's basically what they're asking for. And I realize I'm getting my soapbox out here a little bit, but man, come on. The silent majority is going to finally going to have enough and not allow these stupid laws, which whoever thought up this idea, I'm like, well, maybe it's not a law. I understand that. It's his recommendation. Whatever, bro. How about you do your job and arrest some of these folks and actually punish them, not turn a blind eye? You know, I mean, I don't know. I've never been to Canada. I'm obviously throwing a lot of shade at them, but come on. This is what happens when you have a disarmed population of good people. The bad people get a license to kill, for lack of a better word. And we got to do better. And I know a lot of you out there, I'm preaching to the choir. I meet and see you guys in the real world, in the shops, etc. You guys are not the folks that would think that's a bad idea, in my opinion. Sarah, you think I'm being a little heavy-handed this morning?
No, you just get tired of hearing this news over and over and over again, where it's like the hard-earned or the hard-working person who has worked so many hours to be able to pay for something, and then it just immediately gets taken, mm-hmm. and there's no repercussions.
Yeah.
It is very frustrating, but believe it or not, we are officially out of show. If you're out there in radio land, you have a question or a comment for us, feel free to text us on the Pyramid Roofing Company talk and text line. That phone number is 417-447-5743, or you can reach out to us on social media at 1041KSGF. Dustin, I hope you have a good rest of your weekend.
You too. Be safe out there.
Bye.